Welcome to the Nightly Five podcast with Ben O'Shea.
Last night, the New South Wales Police overnight declared this a terror incident.
What you just heard is the moment an Orthodox Christian bishop was attacked during a sermon last night at the Assyrian Christ the Good Shepherd Church in Sydney's West, and then Prime Minister Anthony Albanese confirming New South Wales police have called the crime, allegedly committed by a 16-year-old, a terror attack. Here to help us understand is an expert on terrorism and violent extremism from Deakin University, Professor Greg Barton. Professor Barton, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. A pleasure.
And so, can you start by explaining why the church attack last night is an act of terrorism, but not Saturday's mass killing at Bondi Junction?
Well, first thing to say, of course, is that both have ongoing investigations, and just because they start out with a certain framing doesn't mean that's the way it's going to end up. But police have to make a decision. They need to communicate with the public to maintain public trust and understanding, and so they've got to be as transparent as they can. So Saturday they said, we don't see anything about this individual, having identified him, that suggests he's acting as part of a group that believe that the use of violence is going to bring about a political change. And that's the definition of terrorism. Whereas for the 16-year-old knifeman at the church, they identified him and presumably found things in his social media and online postings and footprint and perhaps in his immediate physical social circle that made them believe that he was acting out of a sense that he was going to change the system by using violence. So there is a difference between personal animus and individual acts of hate and acts of violence, which can be, you know, very hateful and awful, but that the individual thinks are somehow justified because they're bringing about political change.
Mm. And the attacker last night at the church in Western Sydney is alleged to have justified his actions by saying he was defending his prophet. What do we know about the potential motivations behind this incident?
Yeah, in isolation, that seems kind of a bit silly because presumably, when he said defending his prophet, he thought that he was somehow defending Islam and the prophet Muhammad by going in and attacking a Christian bishop. And that seems like a long bow. Like, you know, why would you even think that what somebody in a different community is saying is somehow your responsibility to respond to? But we understand this is an Assyrian church for the Assyrian ethnic community, which was a small minority in Iraq, but also parts of northeastern Syria. And in northwestern Iraq and northeastern Syria, this was the area that was taken over by Islamic State for their caliphate. And so from a community that was just 3% of the Iraqi population, 40% of the Iraqi refugees who fled Islamic State violence were from the Assyrian community. And in Australia, the Assyrian community is perhaps as large as 60,000 people. So that gives it a particular context. It suggests that this 16-year-old thought that he was acting in the name of a group perhaps like Islamic State, perhaps linked to Islamic State, and that this was an appropriate target, appropriate act of violence, because he was fixated on the idea that somehow this would lead to larger things, to social change. So not just a hate crime, but something more, which is why police are saying, well, that fits the definition of terrorism. We're looking for the larger pattern. We're looking to see who his social network was and to what extent maybe they're an ongoing threat, and in any case, what's going on there. The fact that you had an angry crowd response, which in itself is a terrible development, was probably what the knife man and the people in his social network intended, and that sort of adds to the awfulness of it, because indeed this is a community with lots of trauma and tensions, and so more easily provoked than most, and that's exactly what we should be paying attention to in terms of trying to keep everyone safe.
Mm. ASIO boss Mike Burgess has said today that the incident last night fit the profile that he warned us about in 2022, the idea of a lone wolf actor. How hard is it to stop these kinds of attacks, and how prepared are local authorities when something like this unfolds in the suburbs?
Well, lone actor, I mean, it's probably better to say lone actor than lone wolf, because lone wolf was the term that the original terrorists, the anarchists, you know, going back more than 120 years ago, used to describe themselves. They thought it was an act of heroism to launch into an act of violence. But lone actors are really hard to see coming and hard to prevent. A classic example was the Australian terrorist who shot dead 51 people in prayer in Christchurch in March 2019. Terrible cold-blooded violence. And we're still asking the question, what could have been done to see this guy transitioning from a guy who posted hateful stuff to a guy who would pick up AR-15s and launch a murderous attack? Very hard to spot. And in the case of Christchurch, the availability of those weapons led to a terrible attack. But even if you do all the sensible things for limiting access to weapons, pretty much anyone can go out and rent a heavy vehicle or just go to the kitchen drawer and pull out a knife and go to a public space. And you can't do everything to eliminate that threat. You can train people at shopping malls to respond to a lone gunman or a lone knife attacker, which is what happened at Bondi Junction. They responded with, you know, great bravery and doing exactly the right things, as did the parishioners at the church last night. They lunged forward and probably saved the lives of the bishop and the priest. But could they have seen that lone actor coming through the door? Probably not. Maybe there's a lesson there about perimeter security. When you're doing a live streaming service for a sensitive community, perhaps taking attention to make sure you've got security on your doors and people just can't run through the building with a knife. There's some things you can do better. But yeah, the reason Mike Burgess speaks about the great fear of lone actor attacks is they're so hard to foresee and so hard to stop.
Mm. And I think then the talk turns pretty naturally to social media, where some of these lone actors are quietly radicalised, potentially, you know, in the bedrooms of their parents' homes. The eSafety Commissioner last month issued legal notices to the big tech companies like Google and Meta and X, formerly Twitter, and Telegram and Reddit, requiring each company to report on the steps they're taking to protect Australians from violent extremist material. Are the big tech platforms doing enough?
Long story short, no, they're not. The big tech platforms are very reluctant to spend their own money when they don't have to, or to, you know, link to this, eat into their business model by, you know, the clickbait model of promoting more and more extreme material so people keep responding. They don't want to stop doing that, and they will only stop or do it less to the extent they're forced. The European Union, European Parliament's taking strong measures. They've got an easier run in other countries. Australia's, you know, stepping up on this. That's part of the solution, and it's fair enough to criticise the big tech players. But there's a bigger problem than just that. You know, it is part of what we need to be paying attention to.
Mm. And I think the final question I'll ask you is, now that this incident has happened, Australia has been very fortunate to not have experienced some of this type of violence that we've seen around the world all too often. Does last night's incident make it more or less likely that there'll be another incident? Or is it just, you know, impossible to predict?
It's certainly possible to predict. And if you know, if your job is to work in this area of intelligence and security, then you've got to take it seriously and say, even the Bondi Junction knife attack, although it wasn't terrorism motivation, operates as a kind of a example to some people, perhaps to inspire them. They could do so much damage so easily that there are these soft targets. So the copycat phenomenon is a real worry. And now we've had another knife incident, this time actually linked with terrorism, and it provoked a really angry response from a traumatized community. That actually does increase the likelihood that somebody else will try and do this again. The flip side is it gives us a chance to learn and be better prepared and to double down our efforts to you know, educate people not to respond in anger and to be prepared to do the right thing. I think we saw some wonderful scenes in Bondi Junction in the middle of a horrible event on Saturday, where people working in the shops, ordinary shoppers, responded with bravery and with, you know, insight to keep people safe, to go out and help people where they could. You know, we have the brave French guy on the escalator with a bollard. We also have the only man who was killed was a Pakistani Muslim refugee, new on the job as a security guard, and the reason he lost his life because he stepped forward trying to do the right thing. So don't want people to lose their lives, but certainly putting people in lock in safe places in the shops and responding quickly. That's the response of training and preparation. You can't predict the lone actor attack, but you can prepare for how you respond. I think perhaps after last night, churches are going to have to be a little bit more, churches and other places of worship, a little bit more thoughtful about security, just because in the world we live in, there will be people who will try and exploit what they see as being soft targets.
Yeah, I think that's the sad reality. From Deakin University, Professor Greg Barton, thanks for sharing these insights on The Nightly Five.
A pleasure. Thanks very much. Cheers.